Episode 8 of The Exit Strategy, we welcome Gordon Chang, a world-renowned political commentator. He's an author of The Great U.S.-Chinese Tech War and the Coming Collapse of China. Today we discuss with Gordon North Korea's crypto hackers stealing over $1 billion through video games to fund their nuclear program, the Ukraine-Russia war, Chinese chip stock tumble after U.S. calls for new curbs on high-end tech. Now let's hear the count.
1, 2!
You're listening to The Exit Strategy, a podcast that inspires open discussions about financial news and technology today. My name, Marcus Megarian, a recovering SaaS vendor, joined by my co-hosts, Ralph DeFiore and Swadek Mazumdar. And we're sitting down with startup founders, technology experts. Now let's begin. Everybody, we're back. Another episode of The Exit Strategy. We're going far. We've come far. We keep pumping out more episodes. We're so excited to keep doing these every week. Just to tell you, I'm here with Swadek, our favorite guy, Ralph DeFiore. He's currently traveling cross country. I mean, Swadek, you didn't join him in the car.
No, well, he's flying actually. Yes,
oh,
we miss Ralph.
Flying.
Yeah, we miss Ralph. We'll try and fit his big shoes.
I mean, he's missing a big one today, right? Because he's not gonna be able to talk with Gordon Chang. I mean,
we have Gordon Chang today. That's true. Yeah, that's gonna be an interesting conversation. Actually, you know, it's funny, Marcus. I was kind of searching for some global news, some positive news. You know, not on a philosophical level or a spiritual level, but generally things that are affecting us, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult to find something. You know, the market globally is in bad shape. We are waiting for CPI numbers on Thursday. God knows what happens. All the pundits are saying, well, we are getting into a recession. Could be stagflation. It could be any of those. I don't even know if all this pessimism means things are going to turn around. And, you know, another down cycle is not coming up.
The exit strategy is so happy to bring on Gordon Chang, and this is somebody who could really give us these insights. There's even some topics that I'm extremely curious about because, you know, and I think Gordon is the guy to tell us about it, or at least explain it and shine the light, you know.
Right. Gordon, you know, Gordon is a legend. You know, he is not only a prolific author, but a political commentator as well. As a matter of fact, his latest book, The Great U.S.-China Tech War, you know, and also his previous book, The Coming Collapse of China, you know, the title's really sure to rattle a few cages, I think, right? Gordon, welcome to our podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Swatik and Marcus.
I love that you were even on the Jon Stewart show. I'm a huge fan. I've been only an audience member like 3-4 times, but like never got to get on the stage with him.
Well, he's fantastic. I mean, he is, you know, a lot of hosts, they just sort of slough it off. I mean, he's really interested in the topics that he covers, and it shows. And that's why he was so popular.
I would love to see him come back. Because like with everything that's happening today, it's completely crazy. I mean, I went over your profile. I mean, you have an amazing background. I mean, like the things that like, I mean, one topic that I saw that I believe you were covering, it was this North Korea crypto hacker paving the road for nuclear Armageddon. I mean, what strikes me about it is that I play video games and I even use Brave, which pays me in crypto. You know, I've made, and I convert it to Doge or I convert it to something, but I had no idea that a video game would be something that could be, a video game used by children would be something being used against us.
Well, the North Koreans are very inventive. And that's why, although their society is destitute, they've been able to make advanced weapons. But they've also been able to make advanced weapons because the United States and other countries have not been very diligent in stopping the flow of money. And we've known how the North Koreans finance themselves, and we purposefully don't do things to cut off the flow of money. So for instance, we know that a lot of the criminal activity of North Korea, they get paid in dollars. Those dollars clear in New York. We know which banks are doing this, and yet American presidents decidedly do not use their power. You know, President Trump in June of 2017 declared the Bank of Dundong, a small Chinese bank, to be a primary money laundering concern. That meant that he cut off their corresponding banking relationships in New York, which means that they couldn't transact business in dollars. That's essentially a death sentence for a bank. But Trump did not go after two of the big four Chinese banks that were also money laundering for the North Koreans because they were considered to be too big. And we have seen in the Biden administration, they've been even more lax in enforcement. So, you know, we complain about the North Koreans and what they do, building missiles, building nukes, and troubling South Korea and other neighbors. And yet we have the means to stop them. We don't need the approval of the Chinese or the Russians. We don't need to go to the Security Council where Moscow and Beijing will block whatever we try to do. We can do this ourselves. And American presidents, knowing they have this power, knowing that the Chinese banks have been laundering money, have decided not to use that power to protect Americans. I think Americans should be outraged at the North Koreans, but we should be even more upset at the people that we elect to protect us who have decided not to do so.
I mean,
Gordon, you know, with what you're saying is making the world, obviously, and the neighborhood in general, a very dangerous place, right? It is bad enough to use crypto for you know, money laundering purposes, but it's more ominous to see it being used for all these nuclear programs. And if you're saying that we know about these things and still we are not doing anything, yes, of course we should be outraged.
Yes, and you know, it's not just money laundering Chinese banks. You know, we have seen the Chinese and the Russians blatantly bust UN Security Council sanctions on North Korea. And yet we don't do anything about it. So this is a problem which pervades the American political spectrum, left, right, center, whatever, Republicans and Democrats. They've all failed to do this. We don't take North Korea seriously, but we need to because, first of all, North Korea has weapons that can kill Americans by the tens of millions. But even more important, North Korea is China's paw. It's China's proxy. So we should be thinking not North Korea. We should be thinking this is China.
I mean, you have to figure that this game that they were using, which was probably their main platform, was this Axie Infinity. It's a game similar to Pokemon, but they were making up to $15 million a day. And you have to imagine purchasing power parity in places like North Korea. The wages are significantly lower. So $15 million in New York would be equivalent to maybe 50 times that or some complete huge number? Because, I mean, what does a scientist make in North Korea?
Very little. You know, this is all state. So you're right about purchasing parity. That is an important argument. And we should take that into account when we think about what the North Koreans can do. But, you know, we've seen North Korea make very important advances in both their missile and their nuclear weapons program. And so whatever money they have, they make it go a very long way.
Gordon, you said something that stood out. You said North Korea and China as proxy partners, right? Let's sidestep that for a second and talk about Russia-Ukraine. What's going on there? We have some nuclear threats coming out of that region as well. What are your thoughts?
Vladimir Putin is desperate. His military is failing. And it doesn't seem like he's going to be able to rescue that in the foreseeable future. These missile attacks over the last couple of days into Kyiv and Lviv and other Ukrainian cities, those weren't going after military targets. He was just targeting civilians. And I think the reason that he was doing that is saying, this is a warning, you know, Basically, my next step is going to be use a tactical nuclear weapon. And that could very well mean that he reverses his fortune. You know, overnight, if he were, for instance, to decimate the Ukrainian capital, if he were to go after the major cities, there would be nothing left of the Ukrainian government. And that means that even though his military has been incapable, I mean, even they could walk into a country with no army, no military, and just take it over. And that means that Putin could actually achieve his ambition of annexing all of Ukraine. And then he's not going to stop at Ukraine, of course. So we are going to see the first use of a nuclear weapon since 1945, in all probability. I don't see what's stopping it. And we can talk about deterrence, but deterrence obviously has failed. It failed on February 24th when Vladimir Putin invaded, and it's been failing since that time as well.
So are you saying desperate times calls for desperate measures?
Why wouldn't Putin use it? If he feels that because of the failing effort in Ukraine, he's going to lose his life. I mean, you can only die once, and you might as well roll the dice and see if you can get something out of it. Basically, he could end up being victorious and absorbing all of Ukraine. So why not try it if you're desperate enough? And I think Putin probably is pretty desperate at this point, because these indiscriminate missile attacks on civilian targets really, as I think, is just a warning, basically saying the next step is he's going to use his most destructive weapons. Matter of fact, you know, all this year, since February or so, he's been threatening to use his nukes. So it's not like we don't know this is coming. And by the way, the U.S. and NATO don't have the type of weapons to deter Russia. We've got tactical nukes of our own, but they are gravity-delivered bombs. And for a lot of reasons, which I can go into, but you probably don't want to hear it, they are not very militarily useful. And they're certainly not deterring Putin. So essentially, Putin sees he's got a wide open chance to reverse the war in a day.
I mean, usually you could see with actions of people or governments that if something's not happening or being done, that's an action in itself. I mean, it's something that people aren't actually going in and trying to stop him aggressively. Like there's conversations and talks, but really, what have they done?
Well, the important point here is that, yes, we've supplied weapons to Ukraine, but we've done so grudgingly. And we haven't given Ukraine the weapons it needs to win. And Biden took nukes off the table even before the invasion. So deterrence has failed. And Putin has seen that his threats to use his tactical nukes have actually worked. So why wouldn't he continue to make those threats? And why wouldn't he actually use them if he thinks he can achieve victory? So this has been the greatest failure of deterrence in American foreign policy since, of course, even before the Second World War, because that wasn't us. Gordon, that was a failure of British and French deterrence.
Right, Gordon, those are very ominous predictions. You know, I was going to ask you about the Fed on the war footing, the markets in general. It means nothing. If that's the road, that's the end play, a nuclear war between nations, does anything else matter then?
Well, it might not be a nuclear war. It just might be the use only by Russia. I don't know what Biden would do. And I suspect that he probably wouldn't use American nuclear weapons because we don't have the right type, Swatik. The only ones we could say is, well, we'll threaten to obliterate Russia. But that's a hollow threat. And Putin knows that because Russia has the weapons to obliterate the United States. And we're not going to launch Armageddon just because of the use of tactical nukes in Ukraine. So Putin doesn't really have anything inhibiting him from doing that. Biden has just... This goes back to the calamitous withdrawal from Afghanistan, which showed an administration in disarray.
Absolutely.
And then you have February. And remember, you know, you have the United States, the EU, Great Britain warning Putin not to do this. In 2021, the United States, the 27 nations of the European Union, and Great Britain had an economy that was 25.1 times larger than Russia's. So that should have been enough to deter Vladimir Putin from launching the invasion of Ukraine, but it wasn't. So that's a failure of deterrence. And then, you have Putin making all these threats to use nukes, which obviously have been affecting American policy. So Putin can see that his words matter. And I'm not saying that Putin's use of his most destructive weapons is inevitable, because nothing is inevitable. But I would say that it's more likely than not, given what we know about what's occurring and just watching what Putin has been saying and been doing.
Isn't this the wrong time to play chicken? You know, midterm elections is coming up around the corner.
Well, you know, I don't do domestic politics. I don't know how this would play out. You know, if Putin were to use his nukes in Ukraine, you know, maybe the American people would rally around Biden. Maybe they would wake up and say to the president, this war is your fault. It should never have occurred. You know, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, but, you know, I can see what's obvious. And that is in the Obama years, Putin annexed Crimea. And in the Biden years, he invaded all of Ukraine. And I didn't like Trump's Russia policy, but at least for 4 years during the Trump era, we did not have a Russian invasion of Ukraine. And so that's a real life demonstration of the effectiveness of Trump's policy, which, you know, as I said, I didn't like it at the time, but obviously it kept the peace. I think the American people really haven't focused on this, but if they did, this would be devastating on November 8th for the Democratic Party.
I mean, even for business. I mean, here in Europe, for example, like I hear a lot of people very worried about this Ukraine thing. And in our job day to day is to sell companies, raise money for companies. There's a tremendous amount of interest in the United States to come this way. But I wonder what happens if you mentioned, you know, nuclear armament is used. That would completely stop most business in this sector. I mean, it would be in China as well. It would be here. Most people would focus more on domestic policy, you know, and it's anyone's game from there.
Well, even putting apart the Ukraine war, Europe is going to go through a very difficult winter, probably two very difficult winters. And if you add the use of nuclear weapons, it sends the global financial system into shock. You know, you've already got two very large European institutions in trouble. Deutsche Bank's in trouble, but I suspect the German government will rescue it. But how about the question of Credit Suisse? I don't know if the Swiss government has the ability to rescue an institution of that size. And I don't know if anybody else in Europe or anywhere around the world would do that. But if you look at their credit default swaps, I mean, it's frightening. So just that alone would nuke the global financial system. Forget about Putin and whatever he may do in Ukraine.
So it's going to be like 2008 financial crisis, but
worse.
infinitely multiply worse.
You know, it's not just a financial crisis, because what we have right now is the prospect of starvation around many parts of the world. And that's for a number of reasons, but the Ukraine war is one of them. We also have societies in collapse. So Sri Lanka is a failed society. Pakistan is going through incredible hardship right now. And it probably, or maybe I should say, it could very well be the next failed state in the world. And this is just going to ripple throughout the globe. So this is, in addition to a financial crisis, in addition to war, you have these societies having difficult times keeping things together.
So how do you have the big reset? Because honestly, like if you've had debasement in the currency since the early 70s when we went off the gold standard, and then we have the fiat currency coming in, super high inflation during Volcker, then you have the continuous thing. I think what really strung it up was in 95 with the Clinton Community Reinvestment Act. And then that forced predatory lending, and then pushing. 2008, you have QE1 to infinity. You had more QEs than Rocky films. And then you have like this COVID brought in like trillions more of money printing. And what they thought was that no inflation would occur if you print money. Because after the dot-com crash, 2008, and it's here. But we're focusing a lot with you know, Asia and Russia. The Russians and the Chinese are doing trade within themselves. They're not even using the SWIFT system. The SWIFT system now announced that in November, they're going to be issuing ISO 20022, which allows you to transfer crypto through the SWIFT system. there's so much change that I feel that most people will be unable, most banks globally be unsuited to actually actually move forward in this direction. It seems like a complete pickle of too many problems in one.
Yes, it is. And I think it means that countries can't manage. If you go to 1914, nobody expected war. But the reason why war occurred was because there were too many parties. Nobody knew who was going to be aligned with whom, who was going to side up. And you have, of course, an event, the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand. And leaders around the world just failed to manage this. I should say leaders in Europe and the United States just failed to manage this. So you have World War One. You have something very similar right now. You have the failure of leadership, but it's also the failure of something else. And that is Americans and Europeans, too, don't want to acknowledge what is obvious and what has been obvious for quite some time. And that is Russia and China are forming the core of a new axis. They've got Iran, North Korea, maybe Algeria, some other countries that are bandwagoning with that. And it is a new Cold War. And we're not going to win it unless we decide that it exists and that we're going to fight it. But right now, there is just very little sense that things have changed. You know, Biden a couple months ago threw off that comment, oh, there's going to be a new world order and we're going to lead it. Well, that was ridiculous. I mean, if there's new world order, that means almost by definition, America's not going to lead it. The new world order is going to be a dividing of the world into two or more camps, and no one's going to be leading the international system. You'll have a leader maybe in one camp and a leader in another camp, but you know, there's just a complete failure of imagination and leadership in Washington, and Europe isn't much better.
Gordon, I want to ask you whether we're showing leadership, at least in one segment. You know, you wrote the book, The Great U.S.-China Tech War. Recently, the U.S. government is curbing the ability for U.S. companies to sell advanced computing to China and, you know, licensing, manufacturing, and stuff like that. Give me your thoughts. Break it down for us.
Last Friday's announcement from the Biden administration was great, that they actually are going to do something serious. But two things. First of all, if you look at this and you look at the announcement in August about restriction of chip sales, there are a lot of exceptions there that almost swallow the rule. But the other question is, why did this take so long? This should have been done not only earlier in the Biden administration, it should have been done in the Trump administration. So there is a lot of blame to go to be spread around the American political system. But this is good. This is a step that the United States is acknowledging that we should not be building China's weapons, which are being configured to kill Americans. But that's so basic. But there are a number of other things that we are doing that are supporting the Chinese war machine. And there's no indication the Biden administration is going to tackle that. So this is, I wouldn't say too little too late, but it is later than it should have been. And the administration needs to have more of a robust posture.
So at least they've acknowledged. So that's step one, acknowledge that there's an issue.
Yeah, that's step one. I mean, they're doing the bare minimum. And the problem, of course, is you got John Kerry, the climate czar, who's been urging complete capitulation to whatever China wants so that he can get China to pony up on a enhanced climate deal. But, you know, we got to remember 2015, the Paris Accord, actually, this agreement gave China almost every incentive in the world to pour more carbon into the air because they did not promise to cap carbon emissions until, quote unquote, around 2030, which means that the more carbon they pour into the air now, the easier it's going to be for them later. That is, if they actually adhere to that, quote unquote, around 2030. So this was an awful deal. We should never have agreed to it in the first place, because it gives China the ability to say, oh, you know, we're green, when they're not green at all. So that's a big issue, where we just need to have much more acknowledgement that China needs to do far more. You know, it's Kerry is saying, you know, in the first stages of the Ukraine war, I hope this doesn't stop Vladimir Putin from working with us on climate. I mean, to me, that was entirely a mystifying comment. Here you have Russia redrawing the map of Europe with force, committing genocide in Ukraine, and then Kerry is saying, oh, well, let's have cooperation on climate. I mean, that's hideous.
I mean, there's a big difference between being carbon neutral and carbon free, right? Because you could be carbon neutral by buying carbon credits, but you're still polluting.
And absolutely.
It's a big topic here in France, especially like all these carbon peace accords are basically happening either here in Paris or somewhere here in Europe. And it's a huge topic. It's kind of like how Macron closed down multiple nuclear plants, and now they're forced to buy like gas from Russia and to keep the pace. But you know, the older generation here is very fine with nuclear, but how do you help being carbon free if you don't actually promote things that produce high levels of energy cheaply?
Well, this is unreality. And what has this led to? Well, it's led to Germany now starting to look at coal.
That's right.
Yep.
But you've even been ahead of the curve on this. I mean, you've warned even that, you know, Chinese students attending the United States or U.S. colleges are basically like the long arm for the Chinese policy in the United States, right?
Yes. Well, they're doing a couple things. You know, there were, what, before the pandemic, something like 397,000 Chinese students at American institutions of higher learning. And the estimate was 13% of them were committing espionage. Mm-hmm. There's another issue here. It's not just the Chinese. The Chinese are doing what the Americans are letting them get away with. We Americans have known Chinese consular officials, Ministry of State security agents actually operating in America openly, violating our sovereignty, coercing Chinese students, getting them to commit espionage. And so this is up to us, because this is our country and we've allowed that to continue. So the Chinese are stealing our stuff, but the point is we've allowed them to do that. So this is on us. Here again is something. The American people should be upset at Chinese students, but they should be more upset at their presidents who allowed these consular officials, Ministry of State security agents, to engage in all sorts of activities that are detrimental to our country.
So you're not saying Democratic president or a Republican president. Presidents in general, the leadership is to be blamed, correct?
Yes. It's not just Biden, it's Trump, it's Obama. On other issues, it goes back to George W. Bush and to Clinton. These are things that we have known that the Chinese, the Russians, North Koreans have been doing things. We've had the power to stop them. We have decided not to do so. So why is the world in such a terrible place right now? Well, it's because they're bad actors. But the better issue is, why did the United States, with the power to stop this, did not do so over the course of decades? Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives, they are all guilty of this. The American people just need to have a clean out of their political system.
So given all this, what do you say is the final word? What do you think we should do?
We've got to acknowledge the way the world is going. Things are changing a lot faster than our ability to understand them, which means that our assumptions are obsolete, which means we don't comprehend the danger. We have to acknowledge what's happening in the world, and we have to start taking steps that once were considered to be politically impossible. Because if we don't do that, we are going to end up like the generation in the second decade of the 20th century and like the 1930s. We are going to find ourselves at the precipice of global conflict. That's what's occurring right now. You've got the war in Ukraine. The people in Azerbaijan, they saw things were falling apart. So what did they do? They renewed their conflict against Armenia. They saw the international system falling apart. I think the Chinese are also starting to think that they can get away with a lot, not just Taiwan, but Philippines, Japan, India. And so this war can spread to both ends of the Eurasian landmass. And that means that we could have global conflict. We need to start paying attention to this, because if we don't, we are going to suffer the worst consequences imaginable.
Well, Gordon, you know, I hope our leaders, global leaders, recognize what you're saying and what people have been saying, you know, and come to a better understanding so that this is not the end result, right? We really thank you for coming on and engaging with us. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Swatik, and thank you, Marcus. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to episode 8 of The Exit Strategy. We look forward to seeing you the next time around. Like, follow, share, subscribe. We'll speak to you soon.